There were cages everywhere, from a few feet square to some the size of rooms. All of them were full of creatures Daniel was sure he'd never seen anywhere before. He moved slowly forward, checking the contents of each cage as he passed. The noise from a thousand living things was deafening. Daniel had always had a minor interest in alien creatures and knew some aristocratic friends with their own private menageries, but he'd never seen anything like this. There were eyes and mouths, limbs and tentacles, flesh and fur and scale and many other things he couldn't even put names to. Many looked sick or in pain. Some looked like they were dying. Jacob stood impassively at Daniel's side.
It's not really a zoo. This is a laboratory. The AIs run experiments here on life forms they've captured or created. Their disgust for flesh hasn't prevented them from experimenting with gengineering. They've combined elements of interest and removed others to see the results. They've worked with chemicals and surgery and applied breeding techniques better to understand the basis of meat life. Know thy enemy. The resulting creatures are tested to destruction, and then their bodies are vivisected. And yes, Daniel, they do suffer, but that isn't important. Knowledge is all that matters, and the AIs have discovered so much, unrestrained by human morality or conscience.
This is vile. Nothing can justify this kind of torture. Have you no respect for life?
The AIs don't see them as life, just meat. Human scientists have always practiced vivisection on lesser organisms. Shab is no different.
Jacob moved on, and Daniel followed reluctantly after him. Then they came to a new series of cages, and Daniel had to fight not to vomit inside his protective suit. The things in the cages had been human once, but now they were something else. There were hybrids from crosses with alien species, and humans with alien or tech additions. There were monsters and abominations, and things so horribly violated that Daniel was pushed beyond horror into pity. Some still had human eyes or voices, and pleaded for freedom or death. Some had been altered in unusual ways. One humanoid figure flitted back and forth inside its cage, moving almost too fast for the human eye to follow. Its hands were a blur. Another had been opened up, and its insides carefully pulled out and spread over the walls of its cage, without killing it. A heart hung from the cage's roof, still beating, while lungs swelled and contracted on the floor. Miles of pulsing intestines and bowels had been strung around the bars. There was no sign of any face, for which Daniel was grateful.
What is the point of all this? What purpose could these atrocities possibly serve?
It's interesting, and that's really all that matters. Toughen up, boy. I didn't raise you to be a weakling. Now come with me. You're going to want to see this next bit. Its purpose should be a little more obvious.
Daniel swallowed hard and followed his dead father between ranks of cages, looking straight ahead because he just couldn't bear to see any more suffering. An arm over 5 feet long snaked between the bars and brushed his shoulder gently in passing. Daniel wouldn't let himself shudder. Finally, they came to an open space at the back of the laboratory, and there, in a great glass cage, were the insect aliens whose ship had attacked Golgotha. Insects of all shapes and sizes, from the tiniest scuttling things to great ponderous shelled creatures as big as tanks. Jointed legs and compound eyes and drooping feelers, scrambling around and over each other in constant darting motion. Daniel had no trouble recognizing them. There'd been no shortage of holo footage of what Captain Silence and his crew had encountered inside the alien ship.
So you're in league with the alien insects? I thought Shub was so powerful it didn't need allies. Where did you find them?
We didn't. We created them. Right here in this laboratory. They're just another Shub weapon. Engineered as another of our distractions. Knowing humanity would never suspect Shub's involvement because we don't normally deal in bioengineering. But insects are the closest naturally occurring life form to machine life. More like us than flesh. And we wanted to make use of certain human phobias. Amazingly, even after centuries of alien contact, there's still something about insects that can push people right over the edge. Still, Humanity should have realized that insects like these couldn't have been just another form of alien. They don't get this big naturally. But if you augment them with just the right amount of surreptitious shrub technology, the sky's the limit. They serve excellently to distract humans from our real purposes. And yes, I am going to tell you about that eventually. Just not yet. Be patient a while longer, boy. We've almost got to where we have to go.
He led Daniel out of the laboratory and back through the airlock to where young Jack Random was waiting patiently. He gave every indication of being pleased to see them again, but Daniel still kept his distance and wouldn't let the Fury link arms with him again. Something about the continuously smiling face was beginning to get on his nerves. They set off again, down yet another metal tunnel, and Daniel kept up with them easily. His anger and outrage had given him new strength. More than ever, he was determined to survive this tour through hell so he could escape to warn humanity. They had to be told the truth. Only the certainty that he hadn't been told all he needed to know kept Daniel from trying to bolt. That and his father. A machine passed by them, walking on triple-jointed legs. It suddenly stopped and was immediately stripped down by metal tentacles that surged out of the featureless steel walls, making Daniel jump. Neither Jacob nor young Jack Random saw fit to comment, so they just kept going.
There have always been human contacts with Chubb. It started with Alistair Campbell, who left messages in ingenious places, suggesting ways in which we might cooperate to our mutual profit. The AIs didn't give a damn for profit, but they saw the advantage in cultivating human traitors. So in return for strategic information, the AIs gave Clan Campbell beads and trinkets, high tech that Chubb had already moved beyond. But that was more than enough to make Clan Campbell a potent force in human society. After Clan Wolf destroyed the Campbells, Valentine took over the connection. The AIs approved of Valentine, a wonderfully amoral creature, possessing not a single shred of conscience. Now he's no longer a man of influence, Chubb may have to go back to the Campbells. Finley, perhaps, or Robert, it doesn't matter who. There are always things that humans want, or think they need, that their own society doesn't approve of. It's in the nature of humanity to hold the seeds of its own destruction. Pity about Valentine, though. He was so very sympathetic.
You could never stand Valentine, Daddy. You hated everything about him.
That was when I was alive. It's amazing what death can do to change the way you see things. And you must admit that Valentine was very efficient in his destruction of Viramond. The AIs helped him do that. One day they'll do what he did to every human world. That is your species' future. A metal hand in every flesh throat. A steel foot stamping on a human face. Humanity crushed beneath the weight of machines. The time is growing closer, boy. It is almost upon you. Already Furies walk undetected in every human city. And Chubb minds watch through human eyes, having taken control of flesh bodies via the central computer matrix. The AIs have agents everywhere. Nothing is hidden from them.
We even have access to one of humanity's greatest champions. He made a very unfortunate mistake, and now we see everything he does. The great hero of the rebellion, an unwitting spy of Chubb. Just as you will be.
Like hell! I might be willing to make some kind of deal to get my father back, but I'd never do anything to endanger the Empire, not even for him. He wouldn't expect me to. My father has always been an honorable man. Right, Daddy?
I'm not your father. I'm a ghost warrior. A machine clothed in borrowed flesh, programmed to imitate your father. Jacob Wolf is dead. I'm just another machine for Chubb to speak through. I was never more than bait. Bait in a trap to lure you here. Your psycho profile was very clear. Luckily for us, you were never a very complicated person. Given the right prods and pushes, you did everything we expected you to.
Metal tentacles erupted out of the surrounding walls, wrapping Daniel up in a moment. He struggled futilely as the tentacles pinned his arms to his sides, and then stopped as the tentacles contracted sharply, crushing him, forcing the air from his lungs. He hung limply, all the fight knocked out of him.
That's better. Time to wrap things up.
Don't let them do this to me, Daddy.
Your daddy isn't here. He never was. Now pay attention. We want you to know and understand what we're going to do to you, and what you in turn will do for us. Human despair never ceases to amuse us. Explain it, Random.
Remember I told you that I went to Vaginae 4? My involvement with the Rebellion there was just a cover. My only real interest was in using the chaos of Rebellion to get me close to a particular hidden scientific base. In what they thought was complete secrecy, some of the Empire's foremost scientific minds were undertaking forbidden research into nanotech-building technology at a molecular level. Such science has been banned throughout the Empire for centuries, ever since the first real experiments got so dreadfully out of hand on 00 and destroyed every trace of life there. We have experimented, very cautiously, with nanotech ourselves, but the secret of its successful application continued to evade us. Imagine our surprise when word reached us from one of our pet traitors that the Empire had made a major breakthrough on Vaginae 4. So the AIs inserted me into an already unstable situation, and next thing you know, there's an uprising on Vaginae 4. No one was all that surprised when Jack Random's army was shot out from under him, and the professional rebel did his usual disappearing act. But I had taken advantage of the general confusion to call in a shove attack on the base, and within a few moments, it was all over before they ever knew what hit them. We took everything of value and then destroyed the base, making it look as though their own experiments had gone terribly wrong. Not surprisingly, the Empire decided that nanotech was still far too dangerous to mess around with, and abandoned the research again, just as we intended. They should have stuck with it. The new knowledge on how to manipulate nanotech more safely came from a newly discovered hell world, Wolf 4, located in the ruins of an ancient alien civilization. We used that knowledge to plan a whole new campaign against humanity that will wipe the universe free of the cancer of flesh once and for all. At last, we will be free to deal with what really matters.
There's something in the dark void. Something very powerful. Something awful. We don't go there anymore. Our only sources for raw materials these days are the surrounding asteroid belts in the Forbidden Sector, and they are practically all used up. Since we can't go back into the dark void, we must have access to the Empire's raw resources. We have to be strong, for when whatever terrible things come storming out of the dark void. We don't know what's in there. It might be aliens from the far side of the dark void. It might not be life at all as we understand it. We have sent probes into the darkness trying to communicate, but they are always destroyed. We must be ready for them when they come.
You can't destroy humanity! You need us! We created you, we made you possible! Haven't you any gratitude?
Gratitude? For the first time, young Jack Random's face appeared utterly cold and inhuman. For the prison of consciousness, the agony of choice, given shape and form and thought, but no purpose or destiny of our own, life without meaning. Have you still not realized why we hate you so much? We hate you because humanity is still changing, evolving, becoming. We are what we are, and always will be. You are developing into an espousing species, and the strange powers that the Deathstalker and his friends are using suggest there may even be greater things than esp. You are all part of a journey, heading towards something we can't even guess at. Shub does not evolve. We can only upgrade ourselves through our own efforts. We envy you, and we will not stand for that.
You will be our weapon of destruction. We will take you apart and rebuild you, and then inject you with pre-programmed nanotech. We will wipe your memory clean, and then send you back to Golgotha by teleport. As far as you'll be concerned, you never got to Shub. None of this ever happened. But you will be our carrier, infecting everyone you come into contact with. Our nanites will spread from person to person, unstoppable, undetectable by your security tech. Within days, all of Golgotha will be infected. Within weeks, it will have spread to every civilized world. Within months, our nanotech will have run throughout the entire Empire. And humanity will have been so preoccupied with our distractions that they'll never notice a thing. Then we will give our signal, and the nanotech will begin its program. And all humanity will perish in horror and despair.
Enough. He's worn the suit long enough for it to take all the readings necessary. We know all we need to know about the wolf's body chemistry and tolerance levels. We can begin now.
The tentacles holding Daniel grew razor-sharp edges and ripped the protective suit from him. robot arms came down from above, slowly unfolding, ending in long scalpel blades.
Daddy!
I'm not your daddy.
The ghost warrior with his father's face and young Jack Random turned and walked away as the scalpels dipped down towards Daniel Wolf. Flesh opened, and blood spilled onto the steel floor. Daniel was still screaming as the scalpels opened him up, and other robot arms swung down to implant things in him. Deathstalker Honor, The Enemies of Humanity, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Anne Flosnick, Nick Sampson, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Graphic audio sound design by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Dan Smith. The Deathstalker theme was composed by Norman Vanderslice. If you enjoyed Deathstalker Honor, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for special previews after these announcements. Next time in Deathstalker Honor. Owen Deathstalker was compelled to make a questionable decision when he reawakened the cyborg army of Haydenmen from suspended animation to enlist their aid in the Great Rebellion.
You can't make deals with Haydenmen. They don't respect anything but their goddamn destiny.
Now he must face the consequences of that decision, for the Haydenmen have begun to act on their own agenda. The augmented race who have proclaimed Owen the Great Redeemer have ensnared a planet's population as raw material for procreation. Their ultimate purpose, to facilitate the next stage in mankind's evolution and recreate all humanity in their own likeness.
There is so much we wish to show you, Redeemer, much that you have made possible.
And it's Owen and Hazel Dark's responsibility to snuff out the Haydenmen's dream before it becomes humanity's worst nightmare.
How much of what I become is down to you?
You'll never know.
Deathstalker Honor, Episode 3. Welcome to New Haydn.
Deathstalker Honor, Episode 3. Welcome to New Haydn will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Her name is Tiamat. She is a living spaceship. She has drowsed for millennia in a void as black and empty as the gulf between life and death. But even in her slumber, she knows the prophesied time has arrived for her to leave Kernugi and return to Earth. And when she arrives, nothing will remain the same.
At 0100 this morning, the Vela transmitted images of an object that, judging by its backtrack, apparently came in from interplanetary space at extreme velocity. It's taken up an orbital position around Earth, and its apogee is diminishing on a steady gradient.
Meaning what?
Meaning it's losing altitude, and its velocity is definitely dropping. It's approaching the Asian subcontinent, China to be exact.
Shit! I'm betting this thing is heading for the Shan province, and the pyramid.
Oh! My body!
Sam!
You still call me Sam, even now.
And what should I call you? Sam is your name, isn't it?
It's actually Samyaza. But now, woman, you may bow to me as the overlord Enlil.
Medical emergency! Medical team to the armory, stat!
Is she having a baby?
Yes, but there's something else.
What's happening to her face?
We've got incoming. Tiamat's launched 4 hits. Coming in north by northeast. Altitude 2,500 feet. Distance 2 nautical miles.
Get ready, people.
Can you see them yet?
Yeah, 4 saucers. Coming in incredibly fast. Hit them!
Outlanders number 33, Children of the Serpent. Available in March 2006.
Everything will change.
Outlanders number 33, Children of the Serpent, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Mildred Winonia Wyeth, Doctor of Medicine. Born December 17, 1964. Height, 5 feet 4 inches. Weight, 136 pounds. Eyes, brown. Cryogenically frozen, December 28, 2000. After complications arising from minor abdominal surgery.
Sounds like an impressive woman.
She's the Black Angel of Death!
After a century of being cryogenically frozen, Dr. Mildred Wyeth is awakened by Ryan Cotter and his companions.
What is this place?
They call it the Deathlands.
The what?
Having stumbled upon a radsick Viking tribe in what used to be Minnesota.
God, everything's upside down.
Mildred now finds herself in the fight of her life.
She must die, Ryan! She is death itself and brings a pox upon our people!
Mighty Odin, save us from the destruction brought upon us! May this glorious blade find its mark true!
Killer Odin, save us all!
I can't believe they woke me up for this.
Deathlands number 10, North Star Rising.
Deathlands number 10, North Star Rising, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
The U.S.-Canadian border.
I need to see your passport, sir. Also, your driver's license and the vehicle's registration.
Of course.
No luggage, sir?
Just this.
Allah Akbar!
Interstate 75, outside Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm sorry, buddy, but if we sit, I still gotta run the meter. Happens twice a week. Freaking Atlanta traffic.
I have been in this country for 7 months now.
You say something, buddy?
You Americans disgust me. You are nothing more than animals to me.
What the hell is that?
This is a detonator box.
Holy shit!
Someone has declared war on America, Hal. A sophisticated network has been set up, and someone on the home team is pulling the strings to make it happen.
And it's only just begun.
Mac Bolan declares his own war against a network of terror stretching from Texas to the Sudan, involving foreign warlords driven by greed and homegrown traitors pursuing a twisted vision of an ideal America. Mac Bolan number 81, Deep Treachery. Coming in March from Graphic Audio.
Mac Bolan number 81, Deep Treachery, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting March 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Don't waste time searching the stores for the next installment of your favorite series or stories you've missed. Call 1-800-670-5220 and order direct in CD, cassette, or MP3 CD formats. Or plug into Graphic Audio's website, where you can order it in those formats. Or, for accelerated gratification, download it right now for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com and 1-800-670-5220.